before we enter into the process, can we get to know what apologies do we have?
Good morning. There is only one apology from Honorable Murray. He apologized that he is unable to attend the meeting, but he didn't give a reason. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, the other apology is that of the Honorable Mchali. I took him to the hospital last night. He taken ill. He is hospitalized as we speak at Kent River Netcare Hospital. Now, this process where we have requested the interaction with the leadership of the top 10 mining companies was necessitated by the initial sessions of public hearings on the implementation of the mining charter. We have sought to listen to the Federation of Companies, that is the Chamber of Mines. We've listened to the Department of Mineral Resources as the regulator in the industry. We've listened to organized labor and other business entities such as SAMDA. The Department of Mineral Resources gave us a report on the assessment that they have undertaken on the implementation and the impact of the mining charter. And indeed, the picture they painted was a bleak picture, which coincided with our own practical experience as the portfolio committee. Since we embarked on the oversight visits across the country in various provinces, we have seen a situation where mining communities specifically, we found them to have been trapped in the abject poverty. When we engaged mining companies concerned, they could not explain to us exactly why is that situation. And also when we looked at the employment equity levels in various companies, we also found that they were lagging behind. Those oversights were conducted at the end of 2009, beginning of 2010 to now. And after listening to the Department of Mineral Resources, we then listened to the Chamber of Mines, which gave us a complete different picture, where, for instance, on the element of ownership patterns, they have claimed that the progress made by mining companies who are their members is about 28% weighted average, which was the qualification that they attached on that figure. And when we probed further, we discovered that only 33 out of 54 of their members have reported thus far, and that's those are the figures that arise from that. After that, we listened to also other producers such as SAMDA, who painted a much bleaker picture. In fact, they pegged the transformation on the element of ownership to around 5% unencumbered stakes, and indicating that a number of BE deals that were concluded in the mines are either based on long-term loans, which meant that those BE companies were indebted heavily by their financial arrangements. And secondly, that a number of the BE deals would go under as a result of the fact that those PE companies would not afford to can then pay back the loans that they have raised. Furthermore to that, we also listened to organized labor, for instance, in the form of the National Union of Mine Workers, which agreed with the department that transformation is not taking place as required in the mining industry. When we had this picture, then we sat back at the committee and decided that let us engage directly with at least the top 10 mining companies in the industry to get a feel on our own of what is going on. And I can tell you now that my own view is that from what we have listened to last time, last Wednesday to be specific, we did discover that a number of mining companies are found wanting when it comes to transformation. We don't know what picture is going to be painted today and next year and next Wednesday. This says that it's not a child's game that we're busy with. It's a very serious matter, as we all are aware that the general public in the country is rising up to basically claim their stake in the natural resources of the country, specifically mineral wealth, which is the common heritage of all South Africans. And as a result, we are not doing anybody no favor in terms of the transformation requirements that have been put before you by government. It's in fact to put paid to that constitutional imperative that this mineral wealth is a common heritage to all South Africans, and therefore, by definition, all South Africans must benefit from the mineral wealth. And as a result, you see even now that there are uprisings, especially in the mining communities. As recent as last week, we've read in the media, in the newspapers, that there have been uprisings. I don't know if that situation has been resolved in Northwest, for an example, where communities are beginning to feel that government, through its processes, is not moving fast enough, and as a result, they are taking initiatives on their own by simply demanding from within the mining companies that are operating within their area. Now, that's why I'm saying that we are not in a public exercise. We are in a very important and quite serious process where we need to be seen to be acting, and we need to be seen to be providing opportunities and space for the communities to benefit from their natural resources. And indeed, we are driven more so by the pressure that is applied on all of us in the country, that firstly, we are faced with high levels, ridiculously high levels of poverty across the country. And that is counterposed to the mineral wealth, where the country has been declared by international formations that South Africa is the world's most wealth country when it comes to mineral resources. And it's quite obscene where you have this wealth on one hand, on the other hand, the levels of poverty are rising uncontrollably. The second challenge that we have is that of the high levels of unemployment. We know that the mining industry has played a pivotal role in the past in terms of creating jobs. Even right now, the mining industry is employing no less than 500,000 people directly within the industry. And of course, indirect, it's more than 1 million people that are benefiting as a result of that. So we would want a situation where we go back to those heydays when the mining industry on its own created close to 1 million, if not more, jobs within the industry. And this unemployment is so worrisome because a big body of those people that are unemployed are young people. We have seen it on our own. When we conduct the oversight, we would convene a public meeting as early as 9 o'clock in the morning. The hall will be packed in a particular area. When you look at the audience, you would see that it's mainly composed of young people. When we asked, why are you here? They would tell you that we've been to school, but now we're sitting idling at home. We're unemployed. It's a time bomb. It's a time bomb in any measure of any country, that you have a big body of its young citizens being unemployed and have nothing to do. Hence, the high levels of crime, and so forth. Now, the third challenge that we are faced with, which has also been internationally recognized, is that South Africa is the world's most unequal society. That you can trace it directly to our history of racial segregation in this country, from the period of colonialism to the period of apartheid. So that legacy can never go away within a space of 15, 20 years. It therefore means that extraordinary efforts must be embarked upon so that you are in a position where we can narrow this gap of the haves and the have-nots, because that situation also is a situation which is unsustainable. So based on those facts, we felt that we needed to engage with yourselves as the captains of the industry so that we can jointly find lasting solutions that will enable us to provide the direction across the country through this mining industry. So for today, we would listen to BHP Billiton. We would listen to, after that, to Impala Platinum. We would listen to African Rainbow Minerals. We would listen to Exxaro and listen to Xstrata. That is the lineup for today. We have decided to extend the time deliberately instead of giving you 20 minutes and so forth, to give you sufficient time because of the importance of the subject matter. Even in the last public hearings, we've discovered that even though you can say to people, let's engage you over a period of 30 minutes, then people will go beyond because the input would generate questions from the honorable members. So we would therefore try and give you, allocate you this time, but then try to manage it so that we can be able to finish. Without further ado, we would like to then hand over to BHP Billiton and ask you to introduce yourselves and speak to us. What we have requested is we wanted to engage the leadership of these companies in the form of CEOs or the executive chairperson. I don't know how is your delegation composed as PHP Billiton. You will talk to us. And if you don't have that leadership, tell us why it is not there. And over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ravi Mudli, the asset president or CEO of Manganese South Africa for BHP Billiton. I'm here to represent our BHP Billiton South African operations in place of Dr. Mkunazi, who was unfortunately had to attend to a medical condition on short notice. He sends his regrets that he's unable to attend this morning and asked me to represent the company on his behalf. I'm joined by Feleng Yende on my right-hand side, executive in the office of the chairman, Sidi Nyama on my left, who's an executive on the Exco, Manganese Exco South Africa, and Phil Manaria on my extreme left, who's an executive in the Coal Exco in South Africa. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. We fully aware of the issues at hand. The messages you explained in some depth in your opening, Honorable Chair, resound with us. We will take that away and consider them very seriously. We also want to indicate to you at this point what our core messages are for the next 20-minute presentation or so. First core message or takeaway we'd like to leave with you is that transformation is a way of doing business in BHP Billiton. We are driven by transformation initiatives from our board in Melbourne, and we want to leave with you the thought that this is a global initiative for us. and it's not limited to South Africa, and we'll indicate that to you in the presentation. I think the second takeaway is that BHP Billiton has transformation embedded in its business processes. This is the way we do business in our countries in South Africa and globally, whether it's procurement or appointment, recruitment, talent management, in every one of those processes. The third core message is that sustainability is echoed in our charter, in our charter values, and we are committed to that from our board level right down to the processes we have on the ground to make this work for us. Lastly, we want to also indicate, in light of the issues of progress that you mentioned, Honourable Chair, that we remain humble in our efforts in community development and community spend. This is a complex area for all of us to enter into. We've had remarkable progress, and we've been extremely successful in some of the initiatives we've embarked on. We're very proud of that. We're proud of our name to be attached to those initiatives, and I think we continue to give it our best shot every single year. So that's what we want to leave with you as takeaways. I'll ask Feleng, my colleague, to drive the presentation. I'm hoping you've got copies. Copies been sent on? Yes. Copies. Have you got copies of the presentation? No. You're okay. You're right. Okay, in terms of our strategy, our purpose is to create long-term shareholder value through the discovery, acquisition, development, and marketing of natural resources. Discovery meaning our mineral exploration division, which is global. And our strategy is to own and operate large assets, long-life assets, low-cost assets, expandable upstream assets, upstream meaning mining, and diversified by commodity, geography, and market. We operate in more than 25 countries globally, and we employ more than 100,000 people, both contractors and employees. We have 9 customer sector groups in terms of aluminium, iron ore, and the various other commodities. We are listed in New York, London, Australia, and in Johannesburg. In terms of South Africa, we have 3 major commodities in South Africa, which is manganese, of which I'm the CEO. Lucas Msibanga is the CEO of Aluminium South Africa, and Energy Coal South Africa, Mr. Mani Dreyer, is running. Coal has operations in Mpumalanga. Aluminium has got the smelters in KwaZulu-Natal, and our mining operations in manganese are in the Northern Cape, and we have a smelter in Gauteng. We report under our chairman, Dr. Mkunazi. Mentioned that he was unable to join us this morning. The office of the chairman is running BHP Billiton South Africa, but the global head offices of Aluminium is in London. The global head office of Energy Coal is in Sydney. Our DTI scorecards, our mining charter scorecards, all report under the office of the chairman in the South African region. In terms of BHP Billiton transformation policy and our commitment, the company operates on the basis of an approved transformation policy. I mentioned that this is driven by our Melbourne head office as something global. And our BHP Billiton South Africa is committed to transformation beyond compliance. And that's a very important statement that drives us on a daily basis. It is integrated with our business policies and procedures, and it's echoed in our charter values. Our charter values are quite simple. They are one word. Charter values: simplicity, integrity, respect, performance, sustainability is part of our charter, and accountability. BHP Billiton believes that transformation is a business imperative and is critical to both growth and stability of the South African economy. The successful implementation of our transformation will be evaluated against the following: meaningful increase in the number of historically disadvantaged South Africans who have equity ownership, and we'll show you that in terms of our numbers; managerial positions, which will be shown later on the scorecard; and access to business opportunities in terms of our ED spend. improved access to infrastructure, increased acquisition of skills, and increased participation in productive economic activities in underdeveloped areas where we operate our businesses. And that's a very important point to remember, that our focus is on the communities that surround our mining areas. So we operate as per the mining charter targets and beyond. I think the talking point to remember on this slide is that our diversity strategy is mandated by our group. It's monitored by our Melbourne head office. It's on our scorecards, and it's global. Whether our operations are in Chile, Northern Canada, Northern Australia, Southern Australia, India, Asia, we manage diversity in terms of gender, ethnicity, whatever the issues are in those areas that we are operating in. It is critical for us to remember the transformation in our business and ensure that it drives our growth strategy going forward. Being a multinational, transformation and governance and transformation is critical. Going forward to the actual charter scorecard, in terms of ownership, I'm not going to explain each of the descriptors. I think members of the hearing are quite au fait with that. So in terms of ownership, our performance is definitely a yes. In terms of the manganese business, we've completed our empowerment deal for some time now, and our coal business is close to completion. In terms of housing and living conditions, the 1% that's represented in the second column indicates that it's actually less than 1%. The 1% is a rounding off figure, I think. Less than 1% of our employees live in single accommodation. And this is something that doesn't require us to be pushed towards. We do have mines in remote areas where housing is difficult. We've had to build a number of houses to make sure that our employees and our contractors and surrounding areas as well have access to housing. And I think we've been very successful with that. We're very proud of that initiative. There are a few people that remain and will be moved in the next 12 months as we finish the housing. But less than 1% against a target of 25%, I think, is an indication that we do not need to be driven to compliance. And our following KPI on procurement spend indicates the same as well. You can see the same theme recurring in each of these KPIs. Our processes are embedded in terms of procurement. Our capital goods procurement is pushing 51% in terms of purchase from BEE companies. And the same with service and consumables. It's not isolated. It's not an isolated effort. It's a combined, integrated effort in all spheres of our business. It's institutionalized on a daily basis. I think that's the point we want to leave with you. In terms of multinational supplier contribution, which has a requirement of 0.5% of procurement value, this is a new initiative for us. We are combining our efforts with the Chamber of Mines. If you look at that key performance indicator in conjunction with the three above it, I think for BHP Billiton it becomes largely irrelevant. However, we are very willing participants in that initiative. We understand it. We understand its necessity. And it has our full support. And the Chamber is currently examining mechanisms in which to engage and to engage multinationals in terms of participation. Us as a multinational have completely overcome this specific indicator. In terms of the employment equity statistics, our top management has received full score. So our senior management full score. The same with our middle management and junior management as well. I think we, in all our businesses, have policies in place and have had policies in place for some time now to manage this key performance indicator. It does remain something that is critical in the terms of transforming the workplace and providing a platform for transformation on various levels, whether it's community spend, whether it's procurement spend, or whether it's ownership. The platform for that remains black people making decisions in our business. And that's key to our process going forward, and it's something that we watch very carefully. In terms of human resource development, HRD expenditure as a percentage of annual payroll, I think that indicates 3.5%. In South Africa, we've spent, I think, over 100 million rand last year. Globally, we've spent $200 million on HRD and community spend, all put together. So this is not something that is limited to one sector of our business. It's a combined effort, whether it's development of skills, recruitment, talent management, artisan training, employee training. It's an integrated plan. In terms of mine community development, I leave you with the same message that we do remain humble in terms of our projects and project management. Community development is a tough job. Working with the communities and the various regions, we've had lots of success. We've also had challenges, and we remain humble in the sense that we have resources committed, we have money committed, we have people committed, but bringing them all together and aligning with each of the communities is a difficult job. The number that you see up on the screen is our year-to-date performance, and we're very, very confident that we will reach that end state of 160 million by the end of June financial year. Our financial year runs to June next year. In terms of sustainable development and growth, the implementation of EMPs is as per plan. We're almost there. The 89% of the plan on the tripartite action and on action plan on health and safety has gone well. I think if anyone knows the BHP Billiton company, the one thing you remember about us is our commitment to health and safety of our employees. Any BHP Billiton employee you meet is a health and safety fanatic and would be able to train you very easily on these aspects. Our utilization of South African-based research in terms of percentage of samples, we've also met. So we've done extremely well on that front, and we're very proud of our progress there. In terms of beneficiation, we in manganese beneficiate between 25 and 30% of our product. Just depends on the mining product in that year, but certainly no less than 25% of our mine products are beneficiated. We have a smelter, one of the largest manganese alloy smelters in Gauteng, a very efficient plant, and we continue to invest in that plant. We are spending $100 million, close to $100 million over the next 12 to 18 months on the smelter in terms of expansion, pushing up the throughput to around by around 100 to 120,000 tons. It's a very smart smelter in terms of being electricity neutral. So we will not be going to Eskom to ask for more electricity to run the smelter. It off-gases fire into a cogeneration plant, which makes the complex then electricity neutral in terms of requirement for electricity. It's also utilizing its own waste. So the waste strategy for that complex is linked to the growth strategy inextricably. That addition of furnaces and construction of the furnace in the south of Johannesburg is quite a large job creator in that area, and we look forward to commissioning that project towards the end of next year, on time, under budget, hopefully, and successfully. Again, in terms of the ownership, as part of our commentary that we want to leave with you, our BHP Billiton mining operations have contributed to the ownership element by concluding empowerment transactions with BEE consortiums, with community and employee share plans. On employment equity, we've had good progress at all levels in the company. And our philosophy on transformation is to ensure that we transcend quotas, and that we are also continuously looking for opportunities in both these areas, in ownership and employment equity, to ensure that we transform the workplace to a workplace that's more representative at all levels in the organization, not just at the top or bottom level, and go beyond compliance. Human resource development. The company has spent over 3.5% of payroll, as we indicated, and our training system includes bursaries, learnerships, overall staff training, overseas stints for our graduates in the various mines that we have around the world. So it's quite an integrated program with the rest of the multinational company. In terms of mine community development, material progress has been made in this area. Baseline studies have been conducted in areas where we have operations. Stakeholder analysis and engagements are ongoing on a regular basis, and managements are carried out regularly, and we record all queries and complaints arising from our communities and address them appropriately. And also to indicate to you that we have clear records of these areas. We are audited on a regular basis, and those reports are submitted to the DMR as well. On sustainability and growth, I think our environmental management plan has been excellent. On monitoring and reporting, we are audited, as I indicated. I don't want to repeat that. And in terms of beneficiation, we want to remind you that we are one of the foremost beneficiators of product in our country. In terms of the job creation initiatives, we've recently announced the DMO, the Douglas Mine Optimization, investment of 6.8 billion rand and creation of more than 100 permanent jobs. The Klipspruit new mine has created 900 jobs, an investment of 600 million rand. And we have several future projects, and these are the largest of them. The carbon expansion and investment of 1.5 billion rand in the Northern Cape, the Hotazel Township development of more than 800 million rand has been ongoing for some time now. It's also an upgrade of infrastructure, provision of more than 200 houses and accommodation, and electricity, water, and sewage infrastructure. The M14 project refers to the furnace I mentioned in the south of Johannesburg in the smelter, about a $100 million project. And the investment of 715 million rand there creates more than 50 permanent jobs as well. In terms of additional job creation initiatives going forward, we have the high school artisan project and several artisan learnership projects. I think in terms of the social labor plan, all of these items have been audited and submitted, and our performance in these has been quite good. Our skills development youth project is also something that we can be proud of. I leave you again, this was our last slide and we are open for questions. I leave you with the thought again that in terms of our business processes, we are a multinational company, we're aware of that, and we want to leave with you the thought that as a multinational, we approach transformation not only in South Africa but on a global platform, and the methods and processes that we bring into the South African businesses are very similar to the methods and processes that are practiced in all our other global operations. They're managed by group level documents that are audited and monitored at group level, in which we have to report into. So I leave you with the thought that we approach transformation to move beyond compliance, and that we do still have some challenges in some areas, and we continue to work with national, local governments, and our shareholders to ensure that we entrench this in our business. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much to BHP Billiton. for your presentation. Honorable members, I don't want to waste any time. Let's engage with this presentation. Questions, comments on this high-level presentation given by PhD Plato. Any takers? Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Kululu, Honorable Ligani, Honorable Sonto, in that order, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, three short questions. Do you report these figures annually, or how do you report quarterly? Secondly, when last did you report? Thirdly, I would like to refer you to statistics which DMR provided. And there might be a later presentation, but I have one dated 10 November 2010. And it says that ownership at that stage was indicated as HGSA participation at 8.9%. And then net asset value on that particular scheme or that particular page was indicated as minus 2% net asset value. A, can you give to us what your net asset value of your HDSA participation figures are, if possible, and any other comment you'd like to give? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank the presentation from BHP Bulletin. It was short and precise. But I've got a few questions for clarity there. On your procurement, do you think you're doing enough? Actually, that's one. And the second question, Chair, would be in terms of the mine community development. I'll be interested in knowing exactly what kind of projects are those. Any success stories thereof? Because I think if you could give us practical examples, it will assist the committee a great deal. The third question, Chair, will be on your job creation initiatives. Of all these projects that you've mentioned, are they permanent jobs? What kind of jobs are those? And then the last one is on the smelter, which is very, very smart, according to what you put on your presentation here, in that you generate your own electricity. And I just want to check if don't you rely on electricity from ESCOM? If yes, how much? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Milani.
Chairperson, in terms of the structure that you gave to us, I wish there could have been better detail, especially in your South African the South African structure. As it's given there, it doesn't really give a picture to us as to your employment statistics as we would like to see them in terms of employment equity and all else. You must remember that we're not from your company. So your presentation was mainly based on what you have researched and what you have discovered about your company and how you are operating. But in true honesty, it doesn't give us a picture in terms of what we need to see, in terms of what we require out of the for example, the mining charter, the MPRDA, and whatever transformation processes we want to see evidence in terms of your plans in South Africa. It might be international, but the bottom line is we want to see change for our own people in South Africa as priority. So that doesn't really give a picture as to where do you stand in terms of employment figures for directly South African-based employees and who are South African-born? I'd like to hear more about that. Your mining charter progress is more percentages, but I could go into asking perhaps what are your figures like in terms, let's take but one example, your housing and living conditions in the particular plants that are in the Republic of South Africa to indicate relevant evidence changes that are there, especially to ask people who don't know what's going on in your plants. Because what we do see under general circumstances is that there's no changes. So in terms of giving us percentages, they'll be relevant to you, but they won't be visible to us in terms of understanding the actual figures and how much strides need to be taken for you to close those gaps. So the percentages and stuff that are there, I don't think they're very helpful in terms of us being able to go into bigger detail, otherwise we take the whole day check. One of the direct questions I'd also like to ask is, your investment strategies in the country, particularly in South Africa, and the actual benefits that are there for South African-based employees in your company. Where are you? What is happening? And can you get a clearer understanding as to have you invested in the country itself for its people, or is it elsewhere? Only where you are concerned. Under your commentaries, Chair, not wanting to take up much time, I'm just going to generalize because it's an overall that your presentation is more at your international level than directly indicative of our own South African situation. So we still remain without a proper picture as to where does BHP show us that they're trying to near us in improving living conditions in South Africa. Human resource development, you're mentioning the amount of money that you're spending there, which is big sums of money, but we don't have evidence in terms of indicating to us what happens to those learners at the end. Do they get employment elsewhere or do they still remain in the country? And of what benefit is it in improving the black status of unemployed or HDSA people? Then your community development projects that you're indicating there, with blessings and honesty, greatly appreciated, you can see, but still doesn't give us the evidence as to how well are you closing the gap in trying to comply with relevant mining charter processes. Skills development, youth projects, we still face with a lot of unemployment of youth in the country, women as well, especially black. It doesn't give us an indication as to where do you stand in terms of trying to assist close that gap. The audits that you are mentioning, all right, the question has been asked already. Who do you submit these audits to? The public, in terms of public publications, or do they just specifically go to the Chamber of Mines and end there? And of what relevance is it then to us to can see proper transformation processes that do take place? Yeah, Chair, I think I'll just end there because the presentation was so general and not directly relevant. I'd just like to ask a simple question to you people. In terms of the Royalties Act, the present Royalties Act that we have now, where do you stand?
Thank you very much, Honorable Sondo.
Thank you very much, Chair. thank you, Mr. Motley, for the presentation and your team. But I think we need to put it up front why we are asking these questions. 17 years down our liberation, we got into office and found it empty economically. Now, mining industry, therefore, is so pivotal in changing the scales economically. At this point, we realize that some of you have no more interest in South Africa. Signs are showing, though, that
notion and fact is being dispelled. Now we want you as mining companies to change the economic outlook of this country, and we know you can. That is why we are asking all these questions. That is why we have decided to call these top 10 companies to come and hear from them whether they are part of the process or not. In that, we therefore need no lip service in your operations. We need reality, so that where you struggle together, we take some steps of improving those areas where you find difficulties gone. I heard you saying that community initiatives are areas of very, very much complexity. But as complex as they are, those communities are there. And their plight needs to be engaged on for the better. What is it that is so complex about community initiatives? Where do you find difficulties? I'm taking from your introductory remark and pitching it against your slide 13, where you are saying you are engaging these communities in whatever threats that they are raising. And what would one want to know is, what critical complaints do these communities come up with, and how do you address those critical complaints? That is one. The second one, Chairperson, relates to, I'm sure your structure, because I had an issue about your structure. I ended up looking at you, not looking at the organogram itself, because what you were saying is not here, which I thought someone, therefore, when he wants you not to understand, he will start talking about percentages and all, and you just get confused. That is on a light note. But also, you are talking about your human resource development, and you being a company that has posted some progress financially and operationally. What core skills are you training the previously disadvantaged South Africans on? What skills are you concentrating on? I'm aligning this question with an earlier question that said, should a person lose a job in your company, is that person employable somewhere else? Because that is what we would want to see. And you are talking about training that includes bursaries and learnerships. What is local, what is foreign there? Because if we want to improve South Africa for the best, we need to be more local focused than outside looking. That is what we would want to see. Can you just explain us as to what is it that is local so far as that those businesses are concerned, and that training? The last one, Chairperson. Your job creation initiatives, this question has been asked, but I want to emphasize it. Out of all those projects, what can you show us? What is evident that in South Africa we can see out of these projects that BHP Billiton
has embarked on. That is the product. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think you will take it from the questions that were asked that indeed your presentation was more of an executive summary, lacking in details. It might well be that you have looked at the time pressures, that you've designed it in this way, but we had hoped that in your input, you would then further unpack so that we can then have a clearer picture of what obtains in your company. Suffice to say that when we look at your structure, your South African structure, it's quite impressive. What we're not sure of is whether these executives in page 5 are given the necessary powers that go with the positions that they occupy. Do they take decisions? And indeed, you know, below you are reflecting, you know, management teams. It would have been better for us, for you, to unpack that, and so that we can then be in a position to see whether those details do conform to your vision and your stated, you know, direction in terms of transformation, that indeed you very much go beyond just the matter of compliance. You basically practice transformation. This brings me to the question that has been asked on page number 9, slide 9, and you relate that to slide 13 on ownership. I think the question has been asked, what constitutes that 26%? How much of it is BEE, the companies? How much of it is community stake? How much of it is ESOPs? And what is the nature of your ESOPs? So that we can then understand how broad-based is this 26%, and whether it therefore speaks to the requirements of the charter. The same thing goes with your employment equity. You're not unpacking for us, for instance, in terms of your top management, who is who? How many women are there in that top management? And how many male from the formerly disadvantaged communities that composed of that, for instance, top management, you're saying that your performance is 46% against the target of 25%. Same goes with senior management, middle management, and then so forth. You are not also reporting on women in terms of leadership role they are playing and the employment levels of women within your current stable of your companies. When it comes to the mine community development on slide number 11, I don't know from when is this figure, the approved budget of 160 million and the actual expenditure of 84 million, what period does it cover? And so that we can then have a feel. Was this done since 2009, for example, when the department conducted its assessment on the implementation of the charter, or is it coming long before then, so that we can have a feel of what is it that has been happening within the company? And then on the issue of the future, just before getting to the future, we understand that in your coal business, transformation levels are not as much as what is happening in your manganese business. Can you give us the synopsis of that situation? Linked to that, there are women in mining in Mpumalanga that have at one stage approached us as the portfolio committee, being frustrated, especially in the arrangement of BECSA, being frustrated, and we've referred that matter to DMR to handle it so that we can then find a solution. But we would want you to speak to that. You see, because, in terms of your record on what you are telling us and some of these experiences that we come across, it's a matter that we need to clarify. I hope you would relate to these women in mining in Mpumalanga that have got this problem. I want to join those that are saying that in terms of your future investment, we very much appreciate your 6.8 billion, but the number of jobs created is so low. For instance, in that project of 6.8 billion, is it true that you only created 100 jobs? And again, in that new mine in Klipspruit, you only created about 916 jobs. And what does this say in terms of your future commitment into the country? We understand as an international company, you've got a pool of investment funds that you're sitting on that are not coming into South Africa as a foreign direct investment. You are investing them elsewhere. Could there be a particular reason why you're not prioritizing South Africa as a country that you have been operating in for quite some time, so that we can then have a satisfaction that indeed you are committed? You see, we're asking this. For instance, last week we had the BSP appearing before us. Questions were asked in terms of their commitment into South Africa. They gave us assurance upon assurance. Only, I think, a day after or the following week, then we had that Oppenheimer family has sold its almost entire stake in De Beers. After the assurances were given to us here on a Wednesday. So we're asking of the same from you so that you can understand, because as much as people would want us to believe around this table, we're looking more at the actions on the ground. Because that explanation given by De Beers flew in their faces when we read from the media that the Oppenheimer family is actually disinvesting from South Africa. They have disinvested, let alone the fact that the company TPS will be there, but the ownership of that company is in different hands altogether in Anglo-America. We ask of the same from you in terms of large sums of money that you are sitting in within in your international coffers that do not come to our country. Please, would you care to respond to those? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. A number of questions, so I want to indicate that quite a few of them referred to the statistics we presented. And it's asked my colleague to put one of the tables up. And I think that may provide some assurance to many of the questions that were asked to us. These statistics are presented in terms of the mining charter requirements. And I do want to make it clear to all the members that these statistics are all South African statistics. So there were a number of questions raised regarding the numbers and in terms of the weighting and the compliance. All of these numbers relate directly to the mining charter progress up to October. These are all our South African companies. Okay? These are not global company statistics. Human resource development, skills development, all of the investments in communities, all of these numbers are all South African numbers. Okay? I think what we were trying to indicate was that it is part of a global plan. All these numbers have been reported to the DMR, audited by the DMR, submitted to the DMR, and are all South African numbers. But I'll come back to it in terms of the later questions. In terms of first question, how often do we report? Internally, we report these numbers on a monthly basis, and they're reviewed by all of the chief executives on a monthly basis, chaired by Dr. Mkunazi. And we report as per the requirements of DMR annually, and it's audited annually. When last we reported, I can't tell you the exact month, but we are compliant with the reporting period. So I think in terms of Department of Labor, we have submitted already electronically for next year. In terms of DMR, April this year, we've done that. So. And those, again, I must indicate, those are all our local companies. That's why the structure was presented that way on the first slide, because in terms of the mining charter reports, we have to report under the BHP Bulletin South African group. Okay. In terms of the numbers you spoke of HDSA, 8.9%, I'm not familiar with that number at all. I'm not sure where it comes from. The numbers that you're seeing on the board here are audited numbers, consolidated for our coal mining and our manganese mining divisions.
Okay. If I could just follow up, it's a figure given by DMR pertaining to ownership patterns overall. In other words, overall in South Africa, 8.9%, of which the net asset value of such ownership schemes is minus 2%, if I understand the graph correctly, supplied by DMR. My question was, what could you indicate to us from BHP Billiton South Africa what the net asset value is of ownership patterns pertaining to HDSA participation?
Thank you. The net asset value, as we indicated there, we are a 26% empowered company, fully empowered company in our manganese division. Our coal division is soon to complete their transaction as well at 26%. Net asset value in terms of community trust in manganese is 5%, and in terms of the community trust, in terms of historically disadvantaged, it's fully 26%. I haven't seen the graph you're referring to, so in terms of historically disadvantaged South Africans, it's 26% on coal as well. On procurement spend, those are a mixture of vendor loans. There's a question later. Can I address it under that question later? Or
I think the question there also was looking at the net asset value. The net value of these shares, how much is it in your case?
In manganese, 26%. In coal, 26%. Although the 26% of the value of the company. I'm not sure if that how he's expressing the number.
I think it goes with, if I understand the figure, and you know, I'm not DMR, but I've just read from the ownership which graph again. It's basically an unencumbered value, which, you know, I'm trying to get a feel for the validity of the argument, because if I buy a house, it costs me $1 million. I have to have a loan for $1 million. Whether I've paid 995,000 money, asset value is probably 5,000 rand. But you know, I'm trying to get a feeling from your point of view. A, what is the validity of the argument? And B, can you indicate to us from your perspective, and if those figures are really relevant within the framework you operate, what is the net asset value from BHP Billiton? Because DMR apparently places weight on it, because by virtue of this presentation, I can give you a copy of it. You know, it's not, but it's reasonably old because it dates to November 2010.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is, at that stage, November 2010, the HDSA participation ownership was 8.9%, which seems a far cry from what the mining companies are giving. And that's why my question is, when did you report? How valid is the figures by DMR? Any comment? That's correct. I'm trying to meet the two.
I think there's two questions there. The first one is the ownership question, which I think we've answered. In terms of the structure of the ownership, I think that's what is more pertaining to. The manganese structure of ownership is a combination of equity. So our VEE partners have come in with land that had to be mined into our business, which then we apply for a section 102 from DMR and then mine that land, and they then take a stake in that business. Okay, so they come in with equity, so that is immediate, and there's no vendor finance involved. Other players have joined us in terms of vendor financing, so that would be you know, a period of time where we pay in a committed trickle dividend to that player until such time that loan in the company, so the company finances the loan. It's not an external loan, it's company finance loan from the company itself, and dividends and profits from the company go into paying the loan and paying a trickle dividend to that owner. And that over a period of time, depending on the profitability of the company, that period is shortened or lengthened. And I think that's what refers to. But in terms of a point in time when you take a percentage, that will change because of the profitability of the company. In terms of the coal business, I would need guidance because that is still to be completed. But I think it's very much the same. I'll just check with my colleagues here because it's not entirely my business.
You can perhaps also just give us a briefing because they seem to have an understanding.
Yeah, in terms of our coal business, we can come back to you in terms of what the actual vendor finance structure is and how it works, because that is yet to be completed. And out of respect for the players, it's a commercial deal that's yet to be concluded. We will make it public as soon as we are ready, and as soon as they are ready. But the DMR has been involved in that transaction as well.
So in other words, what you're saying to us is that from your business, this coal business is not yet compliant.
We have four of our six tenures already in terms of the compliance. And it's just administrative in terms of completing that deal, in terms of all the public announcements and things. And there's community and ESOP as part of that, which we have to work with organized labor in terms of that as well. Almost complete, it's purely administrative. We have worked very closely with the DMR on this, so we are convinced that it's a well put together initiative.
See, what we're looking for here is the picture in terms of BHP Billiton as a group company. And then, of course, you are at liberty to tell us in terms of what's happening in each of your subsidiary companies, which is fine. But even in manganese, it seems to be saying to us, we want you to confirm this, that your 26% is not entirely based on net value. Some deals included land, availability, which was brought by communities, for example, which links to the question we asked, how much of community stake is in that 26%? And how much of ESOPs are in that 26%? And within that, how much percentage is unencumbered? For instance, can they go to a stock exchange at a particular percentage and deal or trade with those shares? That's what we want to get at. Of the 26%, how much is entirely owned with full rights, including those of trading in the stock exchange by formerly disadvantaged communities, so that we can get this picture? Because you can give us the lump, 26%, it's the stake that you have offered. But then, what are the conditions attached to this 26%?
Thank you, I understand the question better. The definition of unencumbered that you use relates more to our ESOP, which is currently in the final stages of conclusion with our VEXA business. The manganese business doesn't have an ESOP, but it has a community trust at 5%. It doesn't take the form of a BHP Billiton share
which is traded on a stock exchange by an individual. It takes the form of a trust, which is an independent body with an independent independent trustees, who then spend that money in the community, independent of the company's community spend. So the manganese 5% community trust is different. It's not a share of BHP Billiton shares. It's a share in the company called Hotazel Manganese Mines, and it's a share of their profits. That's the mechanism. The other shareholders are, I would call them, normal shareholders in terms of coming into the business and taking a part of the business, and it's not broad based. It's narrow based in terms of companies. Captain is equal.
Chairperson, can you perhaps just ask that? Then who are the trustees of the community trust?
Thank you. I'm happy to give you the names of the trustees at a later stage. We'll just get it off the system. We'll pass it on to you.
Chairperson, I'm worried about the way we are getting evasive answers on most of the questions. I don't know if it's perhaps we should condone them for the fact that perhaps they didn't know what the expectations would be to us. But we believe in having more direct, visible presentations in terms of the figures that we are requesting, because we've got reasons therefore, as the chairperson has indicated. And more so because we are not getting to the point of us understanding how well are you certain to comply in terms of your own obligations, ESOP, and all else towards the South African mining industry. So we hope that what is being promised now that we are still to get, we will get in due course and as soon as possible, because we'll also need to then engage perhaps with you later to understand better. Because some of the issues they're mentioning, which you must also now refer to DMR, of which we don't have any witnesses to that for now, doesn't necessarily mean that it's a story taken. Because then we'll have a problem in terms of, are you really applying or complying any transformation processes at present?
Thank you. In terms of clarity, 26% for both manganese and DEXA is what we will have achieved by the end of the year. Manganese achieved their 26%. A few years ago, DEXA deal is in the current stages of completion, and I ask that out of respect for the various parties in a commercial deal, that those parties will publicly announce that deal later on. Manganese VEE participants are in St. Bentley at 9%, Iziko at 5%, NCAB at 7%, and the Community Trust of Hotazel Manganese Mines at 5%. I do not know the trustees' names offhand. I will send that to you if you provide me with an email address. It's no problem. I'll repeat that. The shareholders are Insumbente at 9%, Iziko at 5%, NCAB at 7%, and the HMM Community Trust at 5%. The DEXA sale of assets was with Kuyasa in 2000. Optimum Mine, as well as tons that were sold to HDSA companies over the last few decades. In terms of your comment regarding the various other percentages that were shown on the screen, that is the format required by the Mining Charter, and that is the reason why we represented it in that manner. Mr. Chair, I want to go through the various other questions, and out of respect for the people that asked that questions, I want to respond to those, and then hopefully we'll cover some of the comments raised by the Honourable Member. Thank you. In terms of procurement, the question was asked, are we doing enough? And that is a tough question in terms of when do you know that you're doing enough? I think we know that we're doing our best, and in terms of developing new suppliers into our business, we've made huge strides in terms of making sure that skills transfer takes place on a daily basis in our businesses. The numbers we show there again indicate that we are far beyond compliance, and yet we haven't stopped. We continuously address suppliers on open forums in each of the community areas, and we go so far as to measure our local community spend as well. So in our definition, local meaning the communities that surround the mining companies or the mines where we operate. Procurement spend is closely monitored, and strategies have been developed to enable current and future procurement from black and black-owned entities. We have strategies in place to ensure that we sustain black suppliers as well. There are many suppliers that come into the market and go out of the market in very short spaces of time. What we've also done is, in terms of our development of suppliers, we've put together business hubs. One of them is in the south of Gauteng, where small businesses get assistance and draw from a fund, a 14 million rand fund, that we've been funding now for about 3 years, where we incubate small businesses that both deal with us and also deal in the community. And that is just an example of one of the efforts in terms of sustaining suppliers, sustaining business, and ensuring that they don't come into the market for a month or so, supply you with a few goods, take the cash flow, and then liquidate. In terms of mining community development examples, there are several examples. There's quite a list of them. In the Northern Cape, I can give you examples of a school that we've built, which started off with 80 kids, and then now we have 290, and in fact, building more schools for them. And that was now in three years' time. That was the acceleration we had there. We built about 200 houses in terms of that community. I'm going to link that question to a question that was asked later on in terms of the challenge of working in our communities. The challenge of working in our communities is epitomized by one of the problems or issues we've had, where in our Northern Cape area, we partnered with local government to build a road, an access road, which we engaged with our communities over, I think, an 18-month period. We've met the local chiefs in the area. We've met the local mayor, the executive mayor in the area. We've had lots of agreements that we put together. And yet, when the contractor wanted to start working, we had a protest in terms of where the road should actually go. So as BHP Billiton, as a mining company, we cannot determine what the town planning is. We can influence that to an extent, but the final decision and the plans are drawn by local government in conjunction with the communities working together. And aligning everyone's expectations is not the easiest thing to do at times. It's difficult. There are many parties involved, and it takes a lot of patience. So in terms of approved community spend, I want to link it to the question asked by the Honorable Chairman. In terms of the number that was represented there, that is a year-to-date number for this financial year only. Only this financial year, not in the last 10 years. So in this financial year, we are confident that we will expend that money. And all I'm saying is that I can share many, many other examples of clinics, hospitals, investments, and high schools, gymnasiums, sport fields, our dream fields submission that we've made. My colleague Phil is sending me a massive list that I can go on reading to you in terms of water recycling, waste recovery, scale skills training academy, etc., etc. We're very willing to send you these lists, and they amount to over 100 million rand in the last year. So we're very proud of these. But we have to indicate to you that we continue to strive to do better. And where you hear noises around areas such as the road that we are trying to build, that's where they come from. Our intention is noble, But we do at times manage the complexity with the degree of difficulty. So that's where that comment comes from. In terms of the next question on job creation, and I'll link that question to a question asked by the Honourable Chairman later on, in terms of the number of permanent jobs created, that number is not using a multiplier. People often use multipliers in terms of economic studies when you start a smelter or you start a factory and you create 10 jobs, and those 10 jobs create 4 or 5 other jobs per job created. These numbers are only the permanent jobs in that mine. So the 600 million rand we've spent at that mine creates the jobs for that specific mine. If we could just pick up that slide, please, filling on job creation, I want to just explain that. The Klipspruit mine investment of 600 million rand, and the number of jobs created there is 916. Those are direct jobs created within the BHP Billiton company in South Africa. Douglas mine operation, the 6.8 billion rand is more on the plant which is already there, which is already an employer in that area. Of that company employs more than 5,000 people already. So the additional 100, the number of jobs created is an additional 100 jobs. The vessel's carbon in, expansion in investment and the expansion to 1.5 billion rand, we haven't as yet quantified the number of jobs that would create, but it's certainly an expansion. The investment of 800 million rand in the Hotazel town development is over about a 5-year period, and that has created a tremendous amount of jobs, which we haven't quantified yet in terms of contractors building houses. The M14 project, an investment of 700 million rand in Gauteng, will create close to 50 permanent jobs, but the number of contracting jobs that create and the associated jobs with an expansion has not been quantified yet. And I think there's perhaps some work we can do in that area. The next question was on smart and electricity of that smelter, being a smart smelter. How that works is the complex already exists. So we are current user of electricity from the national grid, Eskom. Been using Eskom power for a long time, 50 years, that specific plant. And this furnace is a 40 megawatt furnace that will not burden the rest of the grid. It will not require any additional generation because the off gases will move into a co-generator plant, which will offset the amount of megawatts it uses. So there is currently a co-generation plant which is running at about 30 megawatts already, and that will be expanded. And that is what that smart smelter means. In terms of the structure of the business, the details of the structure and the employment statistics that was raised earlier on by the honourable member, all of those statistics are South African employees. The mining charter progress, the format in which it was presented, all those numbers, all those percentages is the format in which we submit them. So I'm very happy to unpack all of those percentages in terms of number of employees. In Dexter, we employ 5,000 people. Number of contractors are 5,500. In manganese, we employ in the mining area about 3,000 people. And in terms of the percentage of women, we are about 18% in total. Women in mining, and about 30% in terms of management levels and above in women in mining. So that's not required in terms of the scorecard, but we're very, very happy to not be evasive and provide those statistics to you. In terms of the 20 minutes we had, we thought we'd stick to the scorecard format. So if that came across incorrectly, I apologize.
In terms of the investment strategy and benefits for South Africa-based companies, HRD and learners, once again, I take you back to the statistics in terms of those numbers. We have compliance again there, but I urge you to recall my statement in that we move beyond compliance in this. HRD learners are part of our feedstock in terms of skills. Mining skills globally is in shortage. Whether we're in Australia, Canada, Chile, wherever we operate, mining engineering skills are in a dire shortage. So this forms part of our pipeline, and we're very committed to that. The question was asked, who do we submit these numbers to and how are they audited? The numbers are submitted to the relevant authorities in South Africa. In our case, in terms of the mining charter, the DMR, we also submit these numbers to the Department of Labor. There was a question asked on royalties. We do not have such instances of royalties, but we do contribute to local governments where certain royalties are required. That specific situation doesn't exist for our business.
The question was in relation to the Royalties Act. Are you paying royalties to the state as required by the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Royalties Act?
Absolutely we are. Absolutely, well, in terms of the MPRDA.
And what figures are you looking at, Bessa?
Figures?
In terms of amount that you've already paid in, and when did you pay in the last amount?
I do not have an at hand accurate amount. We pay them, I think we pay them twice a year. We accrue them and pay them twice a year. And the exact amount I can come back to you on, we can get that number. Get my colleagues to get that number for you. Okay. In terms of changing scales economically and interest in South Africa and evidence of interest in South Africa, I think that's an important question in terms of BHP Billiton. It seems to come up every now and then. Our business is not for sale, as you alluded to. Your experience with some of our colleagues. We are very much in the manganese business. We are very much in the coal business and want to stay here. I don't think there's another manganese or other alloying company that in the next 18 months is spending close to $100 million on another smelter in a country that is electricity constrained. I think that demonstrates our willingness to engage with national government, with our electricity supplier, with Transnet, with all the stakeholders to make sure that we remain here. I think the our company's approval of that project, in fact we've already started construction, I think it goes a long way in terms of sentiment in indicating that we are very much here to stay. Our expansion of the vessel's underground mine in an area in the Kalahari that is rail constrained also indicates that we are very much here to stay. The vessel's underground mine expansion is moving from 1 million to 1.5 million tons on the run of mine, and we will be completing that expansion in the next 24 months. And we've started with 2 years down the line already. So those two major projects, in combination with our township project in Hottesloe, which is 800 million rand, I think those three major projects provide an indication that we are very much here to stay in our manganese business. In terms of the coal business, there are several projects, as I indicated to you, that we are undergoing. We've just opened the Klipspruit mine and completed the DMO project as well at 6 billion rand. And that was a very, very successful project. So at 6 billion rand investment by a multinational mining company, I think it's sufficient to indicate to the general public and our shareholders
that we are very much here to stay.
Okay, I'll address that later, thank you. Colleagues are passing me notes. Let's try to intend to...
Chairperson, in the process of them passing each other notes, I'd just like to ask, to add perhaps for later whenever you feel like answering it, your JV relationship with Rio Tinto, does it still exist? And what exactly is the relationship about?
I'll pick it up later. Then there was a further question on structure and do we take decisions as executives. As I indicated to you on the structure, I'm what we call in our multinational asset president. So I'm an asset president is my title as part of BHP Billiton and my job designation for Manganese South Africa business. In terms of our empowered company, I'm the executive chairman of Hotazel Manganese Mines and CEO, and our board is represented by our various BEE companies. Aluminium, so, you know, in terms of executive decision making, that lies completely with me. With our aluminium business, it's very much the same, and with Bexa, Mani Dreyer would be the defined CEO for the South African business. In terms of employment equity, and we spoke about, would you be so kind, Philip, to just put the employment equity stats up. Again, this is the mining charter format that we focused on. Employment equity, you'd see that the compliance target 25%, the performance against the target is 46%. And the scoring on the right-hand side, we've achieved full scoring. And we get actually uncomfortable in talking about this in terms of compliance, because this is the way that we do our business. We report on these numbers as a matter of fact, but in terms of our daily running of the business, we are very much an empowered company in terms of our senior executives, certainly on my team, being largely black people taking business decisions on a daily basis. And that is echoed in senior, middle, and junior management as well. The question was focused on just want to complete the sentence before I forget, sorry. Just one moment, please, madam. The question was asked around women in management, and I think I responded that 30% and 18% in total. Sorry, please go ahead.
In terms of the percentages there, you are fitted with the picture alone in your own company. We don't have the actual picture in terms of the employment equity when it comes to a number of black women, which is our priority in determining exactly what progress are you making. The total number of employees, which you have indicated in some of your plans, you are aware of. Now, the breakdown of those actual figures can be fitted into the chart for us to get a clearer picture of how we are actually empowering black employees in your company. That's where we are getting to when you say the percentages there might not necessarily be answering us. So if you could get bigger detail in terms of that also as part of what you've already promised us, that the percentage that are there, it's possible to attach them to actual figures per plant in indicating out of, for example, your one plant with 5,000 employees, so many are from senior management, so many are from middle management, so many are from junior management. And out of those, so many are black, so many are black women, Indian, colored, and whatever other. Then we'll have a clear picture as to you taking part in transformation processes that should be evident in the country.
Absolutely. That is the Department of Labor report. It's not the Mining Charter report. We're very happy to share that with you. As I indicated, we only have 20 minutes for the presentation. We're very happy to give you a copy of our Department of Labor report. I'll respond in terms of the amount of women in mining, 18% in the total company. In terms of manager levels, what we consider D lower and above, 30%. Okay? And the number of employees I think I've mentioned. The breakdown in terms of the various operations we can also make available to you. On mine community development, slide 11, there was a specific question on slide 11, Fuleng. I don't know if you can just do that. On mine community development, the question was asked, is this a total spend since the MPRDA, since the mining charter was published, etc. The title of the slide indicates as of October 2011, meaning year to date. So this is our budget for for the financial year, starting in June of 2011, and moves July 2011 to the end of June 2012. And our expenditure to date is 84 million there, and we'll complete 160 million in this financial year only. Accumulated and agglomerated for the last 10 or 20 years, we can make that available. I don't have it offhand, but it is a significant amount of money. That relates to the question asked by my honorable colleague, who asked, the 100 million rand, is that global, the 100 million rand that I reported for the previous year, or more than 100 million rand for the previous year, is completely local, completely South African. There was a question on a woman in Mpumalanga and Dexa. I have to ask my colleague from Dexa to assist me. So I'll respond on that a bit later. There was a question on, I think I've reported all of that, on HRD and skills training and what skills do we focus on. We're an engineering company, so we don't focus on anything other than engineering and mining and heavy industry. So when we do training and bring in talent into our business, the various skills programs we have are focused on our artisan-type training, engineering-type training. Those skills are entirely portable. In fact, for the skills program to be approved, the portability of skills has to be demonstrated. So that is a clear KPI for us. Then in terms of the Dexter's course skills, I'm going to ask my colleague to respond on the issue raised by the Honorable Chair on the Bexa woman that indicated there was an issue of, probably in Pola Township. There was one issue on Bambanani that may have come up, but could you help us clarify the question in terms of what was the issue specifically?
No. What we're saying is that these women in mining in Mpumalanga approached us. Even during the public hearings, they've raised their matter very sharply that they are frustrated by Dexa in terms of not assisting them to acquire or participate in the mine. In fact, there's quite a huge documentation that they left us with during those public hearings. And we wanted you to comment on that. Have those women been assisted to date for them to can be able to participate in your operations as a PE? Or is the situation still standing that they are excluded from your operations?
Thanks for clarity. Would you mind responding?
Sorry, there's an addition.
Thank you very much. Let me also add to what the chair with regard to this TAXA and the women from Mpumalanga. Apparently what happened was that BHP Billiton, they offered some concessions to these women in Mpumalanga, somewhere along the belt of Carolina, Emmett, or somewhere there.
Right.
And they were supposed to fork out something like 1.5 billion rand as a PEE transaction to that effect. Apparently, they could not raise that kind of amount. So some big mining company had the money, so they bought that, they had those concessions from BHP. So they lost just like that, actually. They were offered by BHP, by Bexa, but they could not secure those concessions. So they were very disappointed. They were saying that, no, there's no empowerment there. Actually, you go for those companies that have got more money. So them, because they don't have money, as women, so they just lost it like that. So we wanted to get clarity with regard to that deal. Because, I mean, you are saying you are empowering women.
Yes.
Yet you did not do anything to assist them, actually, to secure those at stake.
Thanks, Prabhupada. Mr. Chairman, not really wanting to sound that we are somewhat defensive. I must say the delegation here, because it's not been with BHP Billiton for that long, this particular issue, I'm not afraid with the details. And if you're talking about an area around Carolina, I am inclined to deduct from there that it is probably something that is associated with when we did the employment equity PE deal with the Optimum. At the time. So I would respectfully like to, you know, to be given the opportunity to go and investigate, and then we will revert, because I would also say I've never seen or heard of the report, and it could be that maybe it is not a very recent thing. So we'll do an investigation and we'll thoroughly, you know, I mean, in the amount that are being quoted of 1.5 billion rand, something tells me that probably the women that we're talking about were very much eager in participating in association with the Optimum. So if we can be given the chance to investigate, we'll definitely come back with a response.
Thank you. Can you round off what remains of your questions?
I've got two more to respond to, and then I'll be done. The one is on skills development youth. We've got a training initiative to equip unemployed youth with technical skills required to gain employment as a maintenance or artisan assistant. The spend for the initial intake of the candidates is approximately 1.5 million. The high school artisan project, this is ongoing investment and recruits high school learners from grade 10 and provides a bursary to them. And this is a spend of about 1 million rand a year. Our artisan process learnerships is aimed at unemployed youth, and talks directly to what you addressed us on this morning, Mr. Chairman. 50% of the candidates will be recruited into our operations. And approximately the cost of this is about 2 million rand. And there are several SLP or social labor plan bursaries which we can speak of as well, but those are the minimum criteria in terms of the DMR, and we comply with those. The question on the joint venture with Rio Tinto in South Africa, we do not have any joint venture with Rio Tinto. Except in terms of the South African operations that we run under BHP Billiton SA, we don't have a joint venture with as an operator in South Africa. There's investments in companies with Rio Tinto in terms of titanium and sands and things like that, but we don't operate those companies. Rio Tinto operates those companies. Is that clear?
Okay. Let's agree, honourable members, that we have fairly engaged with the presenters, and that we understand that you have filled in the shoes of somebody else. You may not be up to speed in terms of the entirety of the information, because an unfortunate situation of your executive chairperson taking ill. And let's agree that also you would come back to us on the details that we've requested, especially on the subject matter of your ownership patterns in all your business units, and give us details in terms of that, including the status of such deals that have been concluded, because you've mentioned some of the companies, your Optimum coal company, you've mentioned your Kuyasa, and a number of others that you have mentioned. But what we would also want to see is how sustainable are these business deals that you have entered into with these PE companies, so that we can see whether you are still compliant, given the fact that some of these deals were concluded way back in year 2000 or so. And just give us that picture, give us those details, so that we don't draw our conclusions on insufficient information. For instance, if we pronounce that BHP Billiton is not compliant, it must be based on the information that you have shared with us. Say, if we pronounce that you are compliant in our view, it must also be based on the details that you have given us. And as we have indicated, this is not just an exercise in futility. We are engaged in this exercise for a reason, and indeed there are certain decisions that we are expected to take. So yes, you will come back to us on the ownership patterns, on the employment equity, on your procurement spend, and any other information that you have promised us that you would revert back to us on. And please, let it not be too long, because once we've completed the list of the top 10 companies, we will then be deliberating over this, the results of these public hearings, and making our pronouncement. So within a week or so, we would be happy if you could send that to the committee secretary, so that we can then, including the issue of the Bexa Bumalanga women in mining, so that we can then have those details. So let's thank you very much for your presentation and the engagement, and indeed we're looking forward to getting that outstanding information. Thank you.
I wanted to ask that on that list that you've given them, at least to add also information pertaining to your CSI. And then, of course, lastly, to just rate them. Actually, out of 10, I like rating. I'll give you 4 out of 10 up until you give us all that information. Then maybe you might...
No. Let's not get into that. Exactly, I was saying we should not draw conclusions on insufficient information. If we make pronouncement, it must be based on what you have told us, what you have given us. But I think this is an indication that we are not entirely happy with the information that you have given. So leave the rating, the scoring apart. It's just an expression that you did not satisfy our expectations in terms of the information. Hence, we give you an opportunity to go back, collect the information, send it through to us, so then we can then take an informed decision based on the information that we shall have supplied. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can we, honourable members, get Impala ready to present? Meanwhile, they're doing that, let's take tea and come back to our desks. The tea is just there at the back, and all of us are welcome to help ourselves in tea, whilst Impala is setting itself up.
Thank you. Thank you.